Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And now, join Kevin Hart as he dives into the minds of some of the world's funniest comedians. This is Comedy Goldmines with Kevin Hart.
Welcome, world. Welcome to an all-new episode of Comedy Goldmines, where we get inside the minds of brilliant comedians. And oh my God, what amazing minds they are. On this episode, we got a creative genius with us. That's right, I said it. A creative genius. A comedian, writer, producer, director. And contributed to some of our favorite TV viewing over the years. From the likes of The Chappelle Show, Half Baked. Look, you can't deny the guy's work and his legacy. Well, God, he's done so much, man. I mean, more recently, you might remember him from his 2020 feature film, Capone, starring Tom Hardy. One of the things that he's done that I think he should be most proud of, he's directed me and my Chase commercials. This is a big deal. His appearances on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm excited to have him here today. Neil Brennan. What's up, Neil?
Kevin, hi. You know, our friend, we'll call him Chris Rock, was kind of shitting on us, if you can believe it. And he said that when people ask him about the pandemic, he's going to tell them all he remembers is our Chase commercial. Because they aired it a lot.
All the time.
Yeah, but you know, they pay you good money. They pay me money. And you know, let them air it. It's not bad. It's not like the funniest shit either of us have ever done, but it's a good time.
What are you talking about? Those Chase commercials are amazing. They're groundbreaking.
Yeah, you know what, Kevin? You're right.
Yes.
Oh, I don't think it's he's just kind of shitting us. But we don't have to bring up his Apple commercial. We would never, you know what I mean? But anyhow.
Chris Rock. How about Chris's, the pandemic was tough on Chris, man. You know, Chris, he went through.
He had to do what you fear, which is he had to look inside himself.
Yeah.
he met his worst fears, which is taking a look at his emotional makeup. And he made some corrections. Whereas Kevin, that's not who you are. You're a guy that plows forward, doesn't look at all at who at what he's like, doesn't think, should I make some alterations to my character? No, fuck it. I'm a little rock star, little comedy rock star. It's like, fuck it. What's that? Double the confidence. Okay, I'll try it.
Have you taken an evaluation of yourself, Neil? Like, have you had to sit down and dive deep within self at any point?
My whole thing is, because if you look at my Netflix special, is there's one mic, three mics.
Yeah.
One of the mics is just for emotional shit.
Yeah.
So I had to go deep in that. And I'm a white guy with some money. And we go to therapy.
Yeah.
You know, we enjoy a therapy.
Yeah.
We enjoy a medication. And I'm happy to see that Black people are getting more into it, thanks to Charlemagne. We have to thank Charlemagne for getting Black people into mental health. It's kind of true.
Wait, so I want to start at this, okay? And it's easy. It's going to be so easy for me to talk to you. I mean, because we have a relationship, and this is going to be one of those conversations that flows so amazingly.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Don't jinx us.
I want to know the reason. What was the reason for you saying, okay, I need to embed myself in therapy?
Because It's a longer story. I don't go much anymore, but the original reason was because I was like achieving goals and my mood wasn't getting better. You know what I mean? Like I was just kind of bummed all the time. So I was like, why am I bummed all the time? And despite, you know, making a living as a writer and, you know, but half-baked, 23, me and Dave were like 23 when we wrote it. It was good time. And I was like, why am I not sort of happier? And so I started going to therapy and my favorite part of your documentary is your shit with your dad. I could literally watch that shit. That's how much therapy I do. I'm like, fuck everything else. Let me watch Kevin shadowbox with his dad. That shit is riveting to me. Wow. So I'm all about, I'm one of 10 kids.
Oh,
like, you know, it's like not enough attention, a little violence, drinking, all that stuff. So I had to spend
10 brothers and sisters.
Yeah, man. I'm the youngest.
Underneath
of 10.
Under the same umbrella. Are you serious, Neil?
Yeah. 10 kids, same sperm, same egg.
And you're the youngest.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So
holy shit.
Yeah.
What a fuck shit. Jesus.
This is fucked up. Stop the pop.
Yeah,
fuck this.
Man.
Yeah. So you know, you have your stuff. And I had just a different we weren't poor, so that helps. You know what I mean? Like you can only be so rich with 10 kids, but like, you know, it's everybody's got their like.
You were okay. You weren't looking for food.
No, exactly. Outside Philly, Villanova, and so my parents were born in like, dad was born in 1930 in like one of 13 kids in the middle of the Depression. So it's just kind of, you know, the way you push through shit. There was no, like, men didn't really have emotions until like 1988.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So like, you know, so it was just figuring out how to be an adult and how to, you know.
Are you an emotional guy?
I don't know. People think I'm hard to read and that I'm cold, but I'm a comedian, so I lack empathy a little bit. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, somebody noticed about me the other day. They're like, you know, I noticed that you always blame the victim.
Ooh.
In a situation. Again, I don't say ooh.
Ooh.
ooh, that's going to be hard to dig yourself out of.
No, you know why I say ooh? I say ooh because as you're talking about, like, we started off by just saying, like, self-evaluation. And then that led into me just asking about therapy. And like, yeah, you know, I've done it. But, you know, when it comes to self-evaluation, when people say things like that to you, I feel like those are real moments for you to stop before you respond. And that's what I kind of got better at. Like when people say things like, you just think you know everything. And you know, that comes from a place.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's also as a comedian, I'd say if there's a four-way stop sign, comedian has the right of way.
You say you got the right of way.
Like we just think we have the right of way.
Yeah.
In any conversation, if there's a pause, I'm going.
Yes.
Because I'm a comedian.
Yeah.
And you more than me, but we both had, we've both been right about stuff that's paid off.
It's a gift and a curse. And this is why I say, like, for me, it was a learned thing. What I learned was this isn't coming from nowhere, right? When a person says something like that, when a person says something to the point of what you do or what you continuously do or what you don't even realize, like at some point you have to stop and you have to take that and listen and just think to yourself, it may be a thing. And even if it's not, how do I make sure it's not? How can I adjust moving forward to make sure this isn't a thing,
right?
To make sure that I'm not the person that thinks I know everything or not the person that doesn't want to let other people talk. Like I've heard things like that. So it's important for me to stop.
And when did you take it to heart?
You know, I would say from 39 going into, I'm about to be 42 now. These have been my most mature years of just like really having the POV of both parties.
Right.
That means within any discussion that you're in with whomever it is, I have a POV of where you're coming from, and I also have one of where I'm coming from.
Right.
And because of me being willing to see from both sides, I'm able to better identify with what you're saying or what you're trying to say. Rather than, it's like, are you listening to talk or are you listening to really listen?
Mm-hmm.
That's the question.
What was the event in your life that made you go, I should probably listen to this shit? Or your daughter? I feel like your daughter's helpful with that shit.
That's honestly what it is. It's having a teenage daughter in today's times, right? Like, you know, we're coming up in a different time.
Right.
And, you know, the kids today feel and they, you know, they express different than how we feel and how we expressed. And it's important to just be like, you know what? I hear you and I understand.
Yeah.
And I'm here for you. Like it's you know, like that level of verbal support needs to be more than less. And I realized that. And I kind of just put it into everything, all aspects. So I've been able, so when you say plow through, what helps me plow through is I've been able to do that. I can do that with me. I can check me really well. I can go, oh, wait, that's Kev, don't do that. Or don't even say that.
Like actually, or like Aniko says, you're better at that.
I can 1,000%. Like it's really what I can do.
Yeah.
I think therapy is dope as hell. And I think the people that embrace it, you know, you definitely see a difference in them after they've been gone. I will never frown upon it at all. I think that the only reason why I haven't stepped through that door for anything is because I've identified the problem when a problem has been shown to me or I discovered it, and I've worked on a solution to fixing the problem and not ignoring the problem. That's the difference.
Did you ignore it for most of your life?
No, because it hasn't been that much shit. I don't think there's like the damage.
Oh, just like you just have more problems now.
Yeah, it's just more shit just comes up now because of where I am and what I am. That's it. With you, do you feel like now where you are, it's easier for you to deal with shit because of the work that you've done on yourself?
Yeah, well, I read a book about communication, like literally a class called Effective Communication Skills. And it's just an audiobook. And the first job I did it was the commercial that I was in with you. And the mm-hmm. AD and the producer was like, wow, that book really worked on you. Because I wasn't, because I'm from a family of 10 people, and I don't know if you can relate to this, what people go, why are you yelling? I'm like, yelling? I'm just talking. The fuck are you talking about yelling? You're really upsetting me, right? With how angry you're like, angry? This is just Philly shit. Like, this is not even, this is just one intent. So it was the first time where I was like, okay, let me take, you know, just saying in conversation with people, like I listened to this guy, a negotiator, say, the key to being a good negotiator is to repeat back what people say to you and with the thing of going, so if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is da 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 da. And like 70% of the time, people will drop the hostage right then because they just wanted you to hear what they were saying. That's what the whole hostage thing was about. Acknowledge that I live in some reality. It's not even about this lady and money and all. It's just about you going, I know where you're coming from.
I love the reference to you being loud and being in like a loud, coming from a loud environment, you know, like.
Yeah, you can relate to that, right?
Yes. It's hard for people to understand why people that are loud are loud. You're loud because you grew up in a loud dynamic.
Yeah.
Where raising your voice was the norm. Raising your voice was the way to communicate.
Yes. And also, if you're 5 and everyone else is 20, the fuck choice do you have? Like I'm not going to, I've been arguing with adults since I was 5.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and so like, and not even nice, not even like give the kid a break, like Irish, Catholic, angry adults.
Did they all embrace and support you and your journey into comedy, like off the back? Or
yeah, actually they, I mean, Kevin, my brother, Kevin Brennan, the comedian, like, so I was in high school. Kevin was starting in New York in the 80s. So I would go to New York and I'd hang out. He was a doorman at the Improv with Dave Attell and Reggie McFadden. Mm-hmm. So I knew those guys when I was in high school. And I used to watch Brian Regan and Dave Attell and Ray Romano, like people that were not, that may or may not have been making a living, like Attell especially. So I was around those guys from 16. And then I went to NYU for film school.
You're right in the middle of it.
Right. So started working the door at the Boston in 92. Dave's there, Chappelle. He's really the only other guy my age. He and I hit it off just like we had similar aesthetics. I would give him punch-ups on his jokes and like a little bit, but we like the same movies, music, all that shit, that like friends shit. He starts popping. And then I wrote a little bit with like Elon Gold on a thing like 94. Then I got a job 95 out here writing for like MTV Singled Out and all that on Nickelodeon. And I'm like 20.
No, you're getting 21. At this point, you're cooking.
Yeah.
You're cooking.
Yeah.
You're cooking.
Yeah.
Like ridiculously at this point.
Yeah. But I wasn't especially good. I should note that. Like all that shit, like I wasn't really getting shit on. Although it's a long story, the Pierre Escargot shit that Keenan did was stolen from me. Long story. And then 23. Dave goes, if Universal calls, tell him we're doing a weed movie. Like, what weed movie? And he's like, don't worry about it. We'll figure it out. And they call me and they're like, are you and Dave Chappelle doing a weed movie? Now, meanwhile, like the longer version of the story.
This is the start of Half Baked. This is how it started. Wow.
Yes. The longer version of the story is I'd written another script with a buddy of mine. And it got to, through a friend of a friend, this producer at Universal named Bob Simons. He produced Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison. I had a meeting with him, was really just fucking funny in the meeting. Wasn't even, whatever. I was just fucking funny in the room. A week later, Dave has a meeting with him and goes, yeah, I'm writing a weed movie with a buddy of mine. And they go, who? And he's like, trust me, you've never heard of him. And they go, who? And he goes, Neil Brennan. And they're like, Neil was just here. That guy's fucking hilarious. So that's just one of those weird things, right? And then me and Dave have, they go, Universal calls and says, when can you pitch this weed movie? And I was like, knew nothing. And I was like, in 30 days time, like just made a number up.
You just pulled a 30, we can pitch it in 30 days.
Yeah, I was like, 30 days. 30 days time, mark my words. And day 29, we started outlining and then pitched it and sold the shit to Universal, and did Universal and Disney both wanted to buy it.
But where did they come from?
We had gone to see the movie Trainspotting, which is about heroin users in Scotland, which you wouldn't think, but that's like Dave, you know, that's like just got great weird taste. We go to see this movie. On the way out, he's like, you can make a weed movie of that. And I was like, yeah, you're right. That's it. And just two 23-year-olds walking down the street. And then 2 months later, he calls me with that. And then here's the fucking crazy part, the crazy showbiz part. So we pitched it, I believe, in early March, right? And Kev, we were shooting in July. And they're like, this never happens. And me and Dave in our heads were like, doesn't happen for you guys. Happens for us.
This is the norm.
Yeah, this is how movies are made. You pitch it in March and then you're shooting in July.
How long did it take you to write the script?
I don't know, like a month. What the, like kind of like 5 long days.
What?
I don't know, man. I don't know. We just had the fever.
What?
So yeah, I know we started in Dallas. We were, when he was doing the Addison Improv, March. It was crazy, dude. It was crazy.
Did you write it, like when you wrote it, did you guys already have the...
We outlined it pretty good.
Okay.
There's a book called The Writer's Journey, which is about like structuring movies, right? You should read it. It's fucking great. But
okay.
Dave read it, and then we outlined on day 29. And once he read it, like something in his head where he was like, oh, like we were talking different languages and then we were talking the same language, where it was like, the thing... There's a problem, the call to action, the refusal of the call, then you decide to do it, then the second act break, and just shit that like structural shit that is all based on mythic 1,000-year-old storytelling. Long story short. But so then we were shooting and I'm 23, he's 23.
Get the fuck out of here, man.
Yeah. And it was just wild.
This is Luxury.
And Diallo.
The hosts of One Song. And we'd like to thank the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on @HeartbeatAudio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Now, here's the thing. Have Baked was a major success, but was it a success when you guys released it, or was it a...
No, it wasn't.
It became like a cult classic.
Yeah, we opened against Good Will Hunting.
That's right.
As Good as It Gets, and Titanic.
Oh, that little movie.
So, you know, it was a little tough.
A great lineup for you guys.
Who's bringing that up? Who's quoting fucking Titanic?
Universal felt that this was okay. I mean, look, why not? It's Titanic, Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, fuck it. But this is something that you, as a producer, so the producer's name is Bob Simons.
Mm-hmm.
And he runs AIC. I'm sure you've met him and worked with him. The reason we were shooting in July is because he was friends with the chairman of Universal, was in his office, saw a hole in the release date.
Oh my God.
And he goes, you need a movie for Martin Luther King Day weekend? And the chairman's like, yeah, if you got it. And he's like, I'll be back in a week. And it's just one of those, like, that's what a movie producer does.
Well, the movie producer actually is supposed to say, what else is in this slot? Do we know what else is coming out? Do we have an idea?
Nah. Dave Chappelle, unknown Neil, absolutely unknown Neil Brennan.
So after the movie comes out and it does what it does, what was the reaction?
That was a bit of a free fall. That was a free fall for me. And it was me and Dave didn't really talk for maybe a year and a half. Not that there was any specific beef, but it was just like a stink.
Really?
Like a stink, just a stink in the
just
air.
Of the work that you guys did together. And it was
like that, it didn't work. And I think he felt like he gave me a chance and I blew his chance, maybe. There was some personal stuff in there too that we don't need to podcast about.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
But it wasn't really money based. It was just, I was in a tough position where I was sort of in charge of making my friend work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like Universal put me in charge of like, are you and Dave writing? Are you and Dave writing? You and Dave writing? And if he, and at that time his dad was dying.
Yeah, personal shit going on and you're trying to put pressure on him that's being put on you.
Yes.
Ultimately, of course, which can put a divide in any type of relationship.
Yeah.
So you guys, so the movie comes out, it doesn't do that well, but then you become a cult somehow.
Yeah.
Where were you guys at, or where were you at when you felt the steam of the movie that was just suddenly becoming a conversation? How long after?
It started to do good. I remember there were days in the, that I'd be fucked up emotionally, just didn't feel good. Like was, I didn't know who I was going to write with. I ended up writing with a guy named Mike Schur, who's created Parks and Rec and Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Good Place. Like he's great. And we,
he's a real deal.
Yeah. We wrote some shit together that didn't go, but it was funny. And actually, as I'm sitting here with you, I'm like, you could be in that movie. I got a script for you. We'll take this offline. I got a release date next summer. I got a hole in August. And we're going to plug it up.
We'll finish
over,
offline.
MGM.
We'll do it offline.
I would just be in free fall. And then I'd hear people quoting Half Baked like on the train. And I'd be like, that's fucking pretty cool. But it wasn't, me and Dave got no Hollywood credit for it. It was just like, I think he probably was good for the road. And the good news was when we pitched Chappelle's Show, he had kind of some heat at a network that size, if that makes sense. Like they would air the shit out of it in Comedy Central.
So how do you get back to that point though? Right? Like there's like a little spat or whatever.
Little
there's some
fissure.
Distance. Yeah, so how do you get back to the point where, hey, I got an idea I would love for you to work with me?
You know, if there's people that you know care about you, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, the thing about me and Dave is like, there's like just an understanding of like what's good and what's bad. Because on the thing I should say is on Half Baked, they didn't listen to any of our ideas, kind of. They were just like, "Yeah, you fucking guys are crazy." I was telling somebody recently at a screen, I was sort of involved in heavily re-editing it. And I'm 23. The editor that I was sort of re-editing had edited Rocky and Dumb and Dumber and Ace Ventura. But he was wrong about this. So I had to go in and like re-edit shit. And he looked at me and Dave at the screening. And you can't say this anymore, but he said, "I guess you guys aren't retarded after all."
Yeah.
Like, thanks, guy who's supposed to be working for us. So there wasn't like a ton of respect. So there was like a level he knew, probably like, you know, but not as well. Like if we're doing something together, it's going to be pretty good. You know what I mean? Like it's not going to be awful.
Yeah.
And so he knew that. And there's like a personal thing of like knowing inside jokes and all that shit. So yeah, I think that's what made him want to do the TV show. And then on the TV show, we were like real control freaks because of Half Baked.
Because of the experience that you have from Half Baked.
Yeah, because no one really listened to us. So it was like, oh, well, every fabric of every shirt has to go through one of us.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass and it makes you crazy. And you got to go to Africa after two seasons. But before you do.
How old are you guys here?
At that point, 29.
Mm.
29, yeah.
So you're polished.
You're still pretty young.
Yeah, but now, but yeah. You're...
Yeah, but not really, yeah.
You're young, but you're polished within the business because that's a six-year gap where you guys once were.
Yeah.
Once again, somehow you find yourself in a position of doing something that falls into the space of becoming that cult classic, right?
Right.
While you guys are in it, of course, you notice it's getting big. It's getting massive. I don't want to talk about the after because we all know about the after. You know, everybody knows about Chappelle leaving, and I'm quite sure you've been asked that several times. So I don't need to know about what did Neil do now? What'd you do, Neil? I don't want to know that. I want to know about at the height of, you know, the heat while doing the show. At this point, did the discussions for movies or anything ever come up? Did you guys ever play around with the thought of writing the next version of a Half Bake or writing that next movie for Dave or kind of going in that direction? Because with you, especially in knowing you, you know, I know how engulfed you were in the show, and like you said, how much you were a part of a lot of those moving parts within the creative. Was there ever a conversation of, this is going great, but we want to hit that big screen as well?
I gotta say, there was gonna be a Rick James movie at one point.
Oh my God.
But you know, what are you gonna do? There was gonna be a Rick James movie. And
a comedy?
Yes, it would have just been the sketch, but his life story.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then that we talked about some movies. The thing is though, how do you look at movies differently than other shit? I used to do a joke with Dave and Mos Def on Chappelle's show, where if they were both really good in a take, I'd be like, congratulations, fellas, Hollywood called and they want you to play cops. Like, so kind of like for guys like that, who hate authority and are like, they don't really want to play cops. Do you know what I mean? They don't want to play anything other than, they don't want to really be other people in a weird way. Or they want to, you know what I mean?
Well, I think the beauty of the pivot or jump, whichever one you want to call it, to movies is when you have that heat and the individual, right? So by that, I mean, Dave is Dave, and he's also got a writing partner.
Right.
I also got a creative weapon. So I'm a weapon, and you're a weapon. So if we keep this weapon together, we can weaponize and do this, this, and that. It's like Will Packer is the reason why I did Think Like a Man. Will Packer saw me at the airport. And he was like, yo, man, I want to put you in a movie. I didn't know who the fuck he was. I thought he was just somebody talking shit.
Yeah.
Turns out he wasn't. He called me when he said he was going to call me. He damn sure had a movie. He put me in a movie, told me he wanted me to be the comedy relief in the movie. And when we worked together, I said to him, I said, dude, we can't ruin this. This is a good opportunity for the both of us. How do we do this again? And he said, are you serious? He said, are you serious, man? Things are going well with you. We're in a space where we can kind of, where we can do more. And I was like, I want to do more. And then hence About Last Night, Ride Along, all of these scripts, all of these things, you know, Packer was behind that engine and I was right by the side. We both played significant roles in a lot of these movies coming on board. Now, I wasn't smart enough to embed my production company and all of that stuff in. So Packer was the producer, and I'm happy he was, because that's where I learned a lot of the producing stuff from. And then as it became time and I got more knowledge, I then made sure to have Heartbeat stand on its own, and then Heartbeat and Will Packer Productions, we started to team up. But it came from us using one another to get there. Like we saw that. So that's the only reason why I asked the question, because of course it was different times, but with you and Dave, it's like, fuck, that's just such a great opportunity.
Yeah. I mean, I think honestly, I was more interested in that than he was. Mm-hmm. That's all I can really say about it, is like, I was more interested in that than he was because I, like, you know, adore the guy, work with the guy. Incredibly funny. Like, I, as a funny person, I can look at him and be like, shit, okay. And I care, all that stuff. So I was very interested in that. And all I will say is that he was not that.
You respected his side of the spectrum. You respected.
Yeah.
Yes. You respected the lane that he wanted to be in.
I was very interested. I get that he was less, he had his own stuff that he, you know, I think he didn't want to feel like, maybe he didn't want to feel like it was us, or he couldn't do it without me or any of that stuff. So, you know, that's where we weren't that old. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where we were 30, and it's stuff that maybe now would play out differently, but you know, it's also like his prerogative. And the good thing for me was I was able to go, all right, well, then I'm just going to be a comedian. I think I'm funny. there's all these Hollywood things that take forever, and it's a bunch of people that don't know anything about comedy telling you you're not very funny. And you're like, I feel like I am. People laugh at me in almost every interchange I have with them. So I just started focusing on stand-up.
I feel like I know this thing. I know this thing pretty well, actually. And you doing stand-up, which you're very good at. You're funny. You've been funny. You know that. That's not, it's not a shock to you, to me, or to the people around you.
But it's hard to go from writer to perform. I mean,
why?
Like, it's a thing that the deeper I got into it, I was like, well, nobody really does this.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think it's harder?
Because writers are generally introverts, right? So whereas you probably approach comedy as a 20-year-old and like, I'm tired of working at a shoe store or whatever. I don't want to work at a shoe store my whole life. I'm funny. I'm engaging. I'm energetic. Let me go to like wherever you went in Philly, mm-hmm. wherever you went in New York. And it was kind of an extension of who you are.
Okay.
I'm not that, like, you're a fucking charisma mm-hmm. machine, buddy. Like, you've been a charisma machine since you were 14, probably. So I had to learn how to be just a little smilier and nicer and warmer and project stuff that as a writer and director, you don't really have to.
I think you actually have charisma though. I think your charisma is in your own way, but you are a very personable person in group settings, in one-on-one settings, in set settings. In other words, like, your comedian takes over, right? And maybe that's been mm-hmm. learned over the years. Maybe there's been more confidence in that over the years. But when I say your comedian takes over, you're never afraid of the joke. You're never afraid of the bit. You're never afraid of
right.
the moment for funny. It's, oh, hey, right. guys, you're here. Well, I didn't know you were coming, and you're in yeah. the bit. So it's like that to me, well, one, is a sign of confidence. Two, it's a sign of comfort. And if it yeah. is or was discomfort, you masked it amazingly. So the only reason why I asked you, like, why do you think it was different to go from the writer to the comedian? I would suggest that it's a little harder for the comedian to go to the writer, right? Because, like, I would think that that's harder.
Well, that's the thing. As a writer, before I was a comedian, other writers would go, you seem like more of a performer. And what they meant was, yeah. you're annoying. so, and as a performer, they go, are you sure you can write? You sure you can? And what they're saying is, you're not that smart, right? So it's like the two things, the amount, when me and Dave wrote Half Baked, when we did the TV show, me and Dave do not say who wrote what. Because anyone who says who wrote that wants to feel like Neil's coattail guy or Dave's being Svengali'd by this white genius.
Mm.
And it's like, I don't know what to tell you guys. He's really yeah. gifted story-wise. And I bet yeah. you're really gifted story-wise. And Dave's really, like, all the ways that people wouldn't assume you are, I bet you are, because as a comedian, you have to do it all.
I will say this on record. I'm a brilliant fucking thinker with story. Brilliant. I can be brilliant.
Right.
Man, Neil, between me, you, and this amazing goddamn audience of listeners that I now have on this podcast, I sat down to write a script by my fucking self. Neil, when I tell you the shit that I read back after I wrote it, when I tell you I thought I was flowing. Oh, this is fucking...
Went right fairly recently as
no,
an adult?
No, this is years right. ago. This may be like...
Yeah.
This may be like 12 years ago, man. You look at the structure of the script. You look at the... When you realize, oh, there's so much shit that I don't know about writing the script. Like, there was no fade to, there was no cut to, there was no open with, there was no, you know...
But you know what I learned? That you learned the hard way? I always say writing is like fishing. Just go with somebody, because it's fucking unbearable to do it by yourself. And the other thing is, as you're a very social guy,
that's pretty dope.
And I'm gonna be like, I know I've had this conversation with like Dave and a few people. Dave, you know, one of the reasons Dave's so good as Rick James, because there's women there. Mm. And you're gonna be better when there's women around. Mm. I've done commercials with athletes. If a fine woman shows up, they'll be like, I'll give you 3 more dunks. Shit like that. Dudes want to show off for women. Like, and with you, you're a social guy. You want to impress the person you're working with. Yeah. When we did that Foot Locker commercial 5-6 years ago, it was fucking very funny. Until Kanye got it taken down. But we're not gonna worry about that. You said at one point, you go, all right, Neil, watch this. Which is like, it's like such a fucking comedian thing to say, not an actor thing to say. An actor's like, okay, I'll take a moment. Yeah. And you're like, all right, Neil, watch this. Like, because you want to impress the person. I wanted to impress Dave. I want to impress Mike Schur. I want to impress you when I work with the like. So there's that element that you almost have to realize what you're like. And I swear to God, I was gonna, at the end of Chappelle Show, I was thinking, we should just put bleachers on set. So Dave can have Will Smith. I've had this conversation with him. We're all better when there's people
watching.
It's like when you're, it's like, or you do something funny on a movie,
your audience, you got your audience.
Yes. If you do something funny on a movie, you know, the crew can't laugh. So instead, but you know, when you got to laugh, because it feels like a bunch of birds flew away. That energy of like, you say something funny and there's that like onset energy of like, don't laugh. That's really funny.
But it's the best feeling. It's the best feeling in the world. Mm-hmm. It's the feeling of, it's the one of control to some degree. And I think that's what the beauty of comedy is. The beauty of comedy is in being able to control an environment, and the only reaction that you need to justify that you're in control of said environment is a laugh.
Mm-hmm. Or when it's also like, control, or like being able to see something in a new way, or in a way that other people couldn't see it. And you're like, you're going like, I'm fucking smart.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm smart because I said this, and I'm a valuable person. Just let's be clear. Mm-hmm. I'm a valuable person. Mm-hmm. First of all, I can perform in front of people like it's nothing, which most people can't. So it just gets like the higher the altitude of like, all right, I can perform in front of people, which everybody else would be stammering right now and need a drink of water. And then I could think of an improv in the 40-year-old virgin.
Mm-hmm.
You look like a different person. Just because you like your skin, whatever, you got all the beauty products on, whatever, your hair, you're small, you're younger. You got, to quote Chris Rock, money is the best lotion. But you're fucking funny with this shit, and like, it's really, you're just really uniquely funny. And I don't think you're controlling that situation. You're
no
taking control of it. You're like, Judd's in control, Romany, you're in control, whatever, the set's in control. But before I go, let me just do some real funny shit, and maybe you'll see.
Let me give you a last blast of funny.
Yes.
Judd did the podcast. We actually talked about
this. Oh, great. Like, you're very fun. And just being able to be poised in a situation, it's a Judd Apatow movie, and he's hot, and da-da-da, and you're like, I don't know, I'm going to be funny in the scene. I'm not going to bomb in that fucking scene.
It's the shoulder shrug.
Yes.
The shoulder shrug. Nah, it'll be good. Yeah, it'll be straight. It's the confidence within the shoulder shrug.
This is Luxury.
Andy Allo.
The hosts of One Song. Shout out to U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for supporting this podcast and for giving our recording studio a sustainable makeover.
Just like music is made of notes and beats, each eco-friendly choice we make contributes a single note that completes the overall melody. That's why Heartbeat and U.S. Soy are teaming up to lead the discussion around greening Hollywood. We're talking slashing the carbon footprint of production with soy-based alternatives like soy-based inks for printing scripts, soy foam for soundproofing studios, and even biodiesel generators to power sets.
To see our podcast studio transformation, watch the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how we pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Here's a good one for you. Here's a good one. I mean, we're talking about just honestly progression here with you, your career from writing, producing, then you going and embracing comedy. And after embracing comedy, you know, directing is now a thing and, you know, you do it very well. What is the want for Neil now? Like, what is it that you're looking to do in the business as of now?
I guess I would like to be a little more famous, which is kind of a stupid thing to say, but just like slightly bigger venues.
No, it's not. I got understand.
Slightly bigger venues. I do like, you know, sell at a club weekend, sell at, you know, a little
you
bit,
like
little
to go
slightly
theaters.
Bigger theaters.
Like
yeah, I do.
Theaters.
I do smaller. I do probably 800 seat theaters, a little bigger. Like I would like to get the way like I'm respected, like Three Mics is considered like a very good special. And I wish I had a little more pop appeal. You know what
Three
I mean?
Mics was so, it was so, it was one of the most creative things that I've ever seen in the special. It was one of the most creative things.
Yeah, that's the
picking
yeah.
which one you want. Like that, that was one of the most creative things. And I think that's where your genius comes into play. That's where your outside the box cadences come into play.
And that's also, that's a thing of knowing you don't, you're so charismatic and so energetic that you can just do a stand-up special. It's enough to just watch you talk. With me, it's good, but I would like to add a little something so that it's just maybe it's insecurity, maybe it's also just friends of mine like my Seth Meyers has been a close friend of mine for 15 years, but he got everything he got from producing and from writing and like making the best version. Like he got Weekend Update because he wrote the best jokes and was able to do them, and then he got the Correspondence Dinner, and then he got the Late Night, and it's from like what's my superpowers overused, but like what's the thing I'm good at that other people aren't good at. And I can think about comedy and I don't know what drama, I don't know what it is, but theatrics probably better than most people. So I'm gonna use that as a thing. And so I guess it's, I would just like a little, I wish I had the popularity with people a little more, not because I'm still pretty popular. I wish I had the popularity with people that I have with other comedians. You know what I mean?
That's like, strong.
So that's, yeah, that's kind of,
I mean,
like,
but that's the proof of the comics is amazing though. You can't, you
of
can't,
course,
we can't downplay that. I mean, it's good to want the popularity, but it's the popularity amongst peers is an amazing thing. You know, when your peers respect,
but there is that thing where you, maybe that's your own insecurity because you're so popular, not insecurity, but the thing you value is I have the thing like you're the most popular comedian in the world. Right. But there are guys that you would say are better comedians than you.
Absolutely.
Right? Like that we've talked about, Chris, Dave.
Chris, Dave, I would say in a heartbeat.
I mean, would you put, are there white people that you will admit to being better?
That better comics? you know, I would say, you know, Louis before all of this.
Louis, I think Louis Burr.
Louis is a very strong fucking comic. I think Burr is a very strong.
Yeah, Burr, I think,
comic.
Is one of the best ever, honestly.
Burr,
yeah.
I think Burr is a strong fucking comic, man. I mean, you know, when you get to talking, there's only about 5 to 6 surgeons, and I call them surgeons.
Right.
And by surgeons, I mean their approach to the craft is surgical. You know, and they're undefeated within their approach. And I also look at who's churning, right? And by churning,
right.
I mean like who's pumping out material, because that's another thing. It's not just about being sharp once, you know.
No, it's about delivering five, six, seven, eight specials.
Yeah, who's being sharp over and over again.
Yeah.
And, you know, always putting a different level of energy and showing a different side or piece of themselves. So, you know, that list that I named, I mean, I think
it ain't long.
I think it's not long, but I think Chappelle, he shouldn't even be in a conversation because he's operating on a different frequency right now.
I remember I said this to you probably 7 or 8 years ago at Montreal, where we were talking about, I was like, his jokes aren't even shaped. It's like a seance half the time.
He's operating on something else. So, you know, yep. I give right now, he's my GOAT right now. And for different reasons. I think right now, Chris, you know, I was talking to Chris and he's telling me, like, you know, he's gearing up, he's figuring it out. But, you know, I love Chris and I love his approach to the craft, right? And the same thing with Dave, like the three of us will fucking work somewhere. We'll find a comfortable space to go and beat some shit up and punch up and beat. I'm gonna put Wanda in there. I'm a Wanda fan.
I totally agree. Wanda and Sarah Silverman both are like, I always forget them with like the best ever. And like, they're two of the best.
Sarah's talented, but I'm strong on Wanda. Wanda is cut from the cloth of the greats. Like,
I agree.
She's fucking strong. And we said Burr.
I knew that sitcom with her and Epps was going to be good.
It's good.
It's like, Wanda can fucking hit for power. Mike's a fucking great wild card.
It's good, man. And that's a big thing for me too. Like, I'm a fan of those that share the craft with me. Like, I'm a fan. So I like to see the growth. I like to see everybody fucking shining and winning.
Yeah, it's exciting. It's all this, like, people are getting canceled. It's like a lot of people doing arenas. It's a real cool time to be a comedian.
I was gonna say, how do you feel right now about the pandemic? You know, I want to say hopefully coming to an end. You know, we see that places are opening back up, people are out, the vaccinations are floating all around, and we're trying to get to a way of old. Well, how do you feel about comedy now and you know, the temperature of comedy from when we left to now? How do you feel?
I mean, I don't know if we can talk about it, but you and I are working on a thing about comedy and
You can say it.
Cancellation for Netflix.
Yeah.
And but it's about more than just comedy, and it's incredibly difficult. And we're going to need more money, you and I both especially. But I'm going to New York to start a new show August 1st. Like, I have a new Three Mics type show, and like I think it'll. I mean, the shows I've done. Have you done any like at a club or?
I have been nowhere. I really need to find a time to go and start working out. Cause you know, once I go, then I'm in it and I'll be fine. But I gotta get the energy to go. I've been busy with productions and movies and the company shit. So, you know, I think after I'm done shooting this one, I'm gonna take a little bit of time just to fuck around for like 2 weeks. And just get bit by the bug, and then after that, figure it out from there. But I definitely, you know, it's a priority as soon as I get the time. It's just like I'm excited to go and just see the energy of the people, because I think there's such
a desperate
need for entertainment, for fun, and I think, you know, we're gonna fall into that. Like you said it best. You said it's such a perfect time for comedy, and I do. I believe that. I believe it is right now.
No, it's great. And there's also, I think I know why there are so many comedians doing arenas and giant theaters. It's because we're the only people that aren't afraid of losing the job. If we're honest. Mm-hmm. And so it just makes it like, wait, you're going to speak honestly in public? It becomes more like death defying. And I think because of podcasts, I love that we're all like good at podcasting because we're all engaging and interesting and know how to be entertaining in a conversation with like subjects. And And it's an amazing time to be a comedian.
An amazing time to be a comedian. I couldn't fucking agree more, man. I love that right now, you know, I asked you, I said, well, what do you want? Like, what's next? And your want, it comes from the craft. You're like, yeah, I want a chance to go to bigger venues. You know, I want to be a little more popular.
And that is about popular. That's like, I think that's the craft. I don't want to seem like it's like going like I want to be richer. It's not exactly richer.
I didn't take it that way.
I guess that would technically happen, but it's I don't know. I just a little bit more what I think I'm not do, but like
no,
I don't know.
You want to be what I took from it is, you know, the bigger side of a draw than what you are now. Like you're already getting a certain audience and a crowd, and you want that crowd to grow to where you can go in a bigger venue. I didn't take it as it's about the money. I didn't take it as about the rich. I think that you want a bigger success attached to your stand-up comedy profile.
What I need is your email list that you collected in 2008 when you were doing the improvs and you had your mailing list and you worked it, Kevin. And how many names did you get on there?
Oh, my God, man. I did. You know, I swear to you, we can probably put a number on it. I'm willing to bet that first round of emails I probably got was in the range of like 9,000 maybe. Because you got to think, like, that's when, you know, I'm just now doing the improvs and I was getting these emails, you know, over the course of like a year and a half.
For people who don't know, you were asking audiences to basically just fill out their email at the end of shows.
And it was at the improvs and at the colleges I was doing. You know, the colleges, they would be a bigger audience. But I was like, just give me your emails. And this is also like when at the emails, and also I remember the tail end of MySpace was another thing that I had. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was all about just engaging with the crowd. That's how I got it to grow. What I would love though, Neil, I mean, dude, you're such an amazing like creator as well. Yeah, that world of TV is just open, and you know, the door to Heartbeat is always open to you. You know, mm-hmm. for whatever type of partnership you want or looking for. I just have a high level of respect for you, and
no, I appreciate you've done, it, man.
And you know what I feel like you can do. So you know, if and when, and I say this.
Yeah.
On the podcast freely. Like if there's a fucking thing and you're like, yo, this could be cool. Ken, what do you think about this idea and something that we can do, produce or whatever, you know, you got a springboard in me that can, you know, get shit to where you want it to get. But you're fucking dope there.
It seems unprofessional. Seems kind of unprofessional on your part to put public pressure on me.
Yeah. Well,
but that's you're all about leverage and you always have been.
This way, no matter what, you can never go, Kev, man, why haven't we done anything? That's bullshit, and you know it. We did the podcast, man. I fucking said it. Remember I said it? I said the thing.
Yeah, you said it. You promised me. You said, Neil, look me in my eye. I will have you on audio format. That's yours, dog. You kept saying, that's yours, dog. Like, from far away, you'd be across the street and be like, that's yours, dog. Like, you kept yelling. And nobody had any idea what you were talking about. How much money you got, though? I'm kidding.
Give me right now, before we wrap up, give me your top three. Give me your top three.
Comedians of all time?
All time.
I'll
give you four. Give me top four.
Shit. Dave.
One.
Chris.
Two.
Bill Hicks.
Oh, nice. Three.
Yeah. And... you know what? And then like it's Louis, Mulaney, and Burr in a clump.
In a clump right there? Mulaney's good, man. Mulaney's good.
He's really good.
It's crazy because I ask this question sometimes I don't, but there's so many comedians, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many fucking great ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got like the great ones that didn't get over this hump to be like the crazy massive ones, but the great ones was still fucking insane.
Like the people that I didn't say, I already feel bad about.
I'm just saying because you said Hicks, and I'm like, fuck, yes. Mulaney, yes. And like, you know, that these aren't names, you know, that you may hear when you're like, yo, give me a three. Somebody give me a three. They don't come up. But you're talking about fucking studs. Studs.
Yeah.
Machines with a microphone.
Yeah. I didn't say Pryor or Mooney or Mortsall or George Carlin. It's like fucking, you know, there's a lot of people I didn't, or like Hedberg, or just there's a lot of people that I didn't mention that are, or it's, Rodney. It's so, fucking so many, Rodney. Man.
It's so so many, but this is the beauty of, once again, the craft that we chose to love, and that's comedy. And I'll tell you what, this is the beauty of this podcast, man. Comedy Gold Mines, God damn it. We get into the minds of amazing comedians. Mm. And oh my God, what amazing minds they are.
I didn't mention Eddie Murphy, by the way, in that list. Didn't mention Eddie
Murphy.
You
can go, listen, you'll be here all day by still trying to get out the ones that you didn't see.
Do we have all day? Kevin, I could cancel some stuff if you just want me to keep naming people.
No,
it would mean a lot to me and my family.
You know,
they're from Philly, so I feel like
it's okay. It's okay. Okay.
You know what's funny is I'm not going to be able to tell my mom I did this podcast, because if I do, she'll start sending me Philadelphia Inquirer articles about you again, which I was able to get out of somehow. and so I'm just know my mom's not gonna listen to this. She's not even gonna know about it.
Well, she will, because I'm gonna blast it, and I'm gonna put a special at to make sure that your mom does goddamn get a message about it.
You got my mom's social? Was my mom on your email list?
Oh, I will have it. I'll get it. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Comedy Gold Mines, and what an amazing mind we got into today. Neil Brennan. Neil, I appreciate you, man. This is dope as hell.
Kev, I'm crazy about you, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Honestly, love you to death, dude.
You too, buddy.
And I can't wait to do our next commercial, buddy. You've been kicking ass on these Chase commercials.
I know.
My guy. All right, guys.
Goodbye.
Comedy Gold Mines is a Sirius XM and LOL audio production. Executive produced by Kevin Hart, Ty Randolph, and Eric Weil. With Tastemakers Media, Emil Garner, and Ian McDonald.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you guys hear about that couple that went on vacation and one spouse murdered the other? In fact, the entire vacation was planned just so that they could make the murder look like an accident.
Ah, so like a slaycation.
Oh boy, sounds like a fun new true crime podcast to me.
On every episode of Slaycation, we'll examine true cases of people who were killed while on vacation.
Was it murder?
Or just a horrible accident?
That's up to you and the law to decide.
But either way, if you leave for your vacation in the plane and come home under the plane, you've definitely gone on a slaycation.
Join us every week for a fascinating new episode.
911, what's your emergency?
But make sure to pack your body bags,
because getting away can be murder.
This is Slaycation.